Welcome to the Life Self-Mastery podcast, where we bring in entrepreneurs who have created online businesses and improved their lifestyles. Here's your host, Rohit Malhotra.
Hi everyone, this is Rohit from Life Self-Mastery, and I'm excited to have Guy Kawasaki, who's the chief evangelist of Canva and the host of the Remarkable People podcast. Earlier, Guy was the chief evangelist of Apple and also a Mercedes-Benz brand ambassador. Guy has done his bachelor's from Stanford University and MBA from UCLA, and he just launched his new book, Think Remarkable. Welcome to the show, Guy.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. So, you know, last time we spoke, it was, you know, 5 years back, you came up with your book. We had COVID, you know, a lot of things have happened, but I got a lot of people saying that, you know, how I was able to get Guy Kawasaki. So, you know, you don't have the, you don't have any obligation to come on my podcast, but you still came, and it really changed, you know, how my podcast fit. So thank you so much for.
I'm glad to help. Right. Listen, you know, yeah. I over and over in my career, basically, I always default to yes. So I, you know, like a lot of people, they say, you know, who's been on your podcast, how many downloads, blah, blah, blah. I don't even check. You ask, I probably say yes. I don't, you know, like my experience is you never know. And someday you may have the most popular podcast in the world, or you might be CEO of, I don't know, you know, Porsche, and you're going to send me a 911. Who knows what's going to happen? So just keep saying yes.
Yeah. You know, I like that attitude. And, there's something about a guy's, you know, golden touch, which is whatever is gold, you know, guy touches. So how do you get that touch? You know, how can anybody get that touch and everything to opportunities?
Well, I mean, the point of guy's golden touch, which is not that what I touch turns to gold. The point is whatever is gold, I touch. So my message there is that if you want to be a great marketer, a great evangelist, great salesperson, sell good stuff, evangelize good stuff. Because it's really hard to evangelize crap. Yeah. So, I mean, this seems like a simple thing, right? But you'd be amazed how many people try to use evangelism or marketing for stuff that's just crappy and it doesn't work. And it's not necessarily the fault of your marketing or evangelism. It may just be that your product sucks. And you know, evangelism cannot overcome a sucky product.
Yeah, no, totally. I totally get that. And, you know, you started the Remarkable People podcast. What's been your learning about building a podcast and,
So I Remarkable People podcast, which is the basis of this book, has been going on for about 4.5 years. So we have about 200 something episodes. And, you know, I thought the hard part was going to be getting guests. And then the hard part would be figuring out what to ask. And then the hard part would be editing. And then the hard part would be deploying. But come to find out, all of those things are not so hard. It's the getting subscribers and marketing. That's the hard part. And I'll be perfectly honest, I don't have the answer for that. Because if I had the answer for that, I would have way more subscribers.
Yeah, but any lessons that you learned? I think I've seen your YouTube channel. You know, it has grown in the last couple of years. But any insights?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you always see these stories. Like, I went from 500 followers to 500,000 in 2 months. I'm like, how the hell did you do that? I don't understand. I mean, and maybe it's just blind dumb shit luck. And, you know, I tell you, if I figure it out, I'll let you know, but I really don't know. And this is kind of the reverse of guy's golden touch, because there is no doubt in my mind that my podcast is absolutely one of the best podcasts in the world. Sure. Okay. Yeah. With the kind of guests I have, like Jane Goodall, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Stephen Wolfram, Angela Duckworth, Bob Cialdini, Christy Yamaguchi. I mean, you couldn't get better guests.
Sure.
And I know I ask good questions, and I know I have good editors. So it's not the product. It's the marketing.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, I've seen your social media channels. You've got millions of followers on Twitter and LinkedIn. What advice would you give to people, you know, who would want to grow their distribution channels and distribution networks and, you know,
Man, you're asking all the hard questions. So I have, I don't know, a total of, 6 or 7 million followers.
Yeah.
Now, you would think with 6 or 7 million followers, you tell everybody, okay, I have a new book, and you say, let's be conservative. So I have 6 million followers, you know, at least 10% going to buy the book. So 600,000 copies of the book. Let me tell you something. I ain't close to 600,000 yet.
Yeah.
And it used to be when you had millions of followers, if you said, read this book, read this article, you know, go to this restaurant. I mean, you could really move the needle. I don't think that's true anymore. It's not true for me. I don't think it's true for anybody. I mean, maybe if you're Taylor Swift and you say, buy this lipstick, okay, everybody goes and buys the lipstick. But if Guy Kawasaki, well, I will never tell you what lipstick to buy, but if Guy Kawasaki tells you, go buy this book, I don't know if I can move the needle, even for my own book.
No, absolutely. You know, I've read this book, Think Remarkable, great book. But, you know, what inspired you to write Think Remarkable? I thought, you know, Wise Guy was like was your autobiographical book. That's your last book. But inspired you to write this one?
So as I said, I now have a couple hundred episodes. So that's 250 hours of podcast. And we write a transcription for every podcast. That's probably 5,000 pages of transcriptions. But no one's going to listen to 200 hours or 250 hours, and no one's going to read 5,000 pages of transcripts. So it was our burden to take all that and reduce it down to about 170 pages.
Okay.
And you could probably read this book in 8 hours.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is capture all this great information and inspiration and give it back to you in a very, very easy to digest format.
Got it. And the first couple of chapters is about growth mindset. And, you know, you talk about you wrote your first book, which is The Macintosh Way, in 1987. Now you're on to your 16th book. So how do you go about building that sort of growth mindset? And how do you keep on, you know, adding those sort of skill sets all the time?
Well, you know, for me, I first became aware of the concept of the growth mindset by reading Carol Dweck's book, Mindset. And that was early 2000s. So, you know, at that point, I was still 40-something years old. And that's the first time I said, you know what? She's right. There are some people with a growth mindset. There are some people with a fixed mindset. And Guy, you have had a fixed mindset in the past. And it was as if she just took, you know, the covers off my eyes and showed me a new way. So I think much of the battle can be that, you know, let me tell you something. If you think you cannot try things and succeed, if you are afraid of risk and all that, what it means is you have a fixed mindset. And a fixed mindset is not good to make a difference and be remarkable. And sometimes it just, you know, it just takes that telling you that, hey, there is another way. So that's the start.
Got it. And during your research, you know, you've spoken to a lot of great entrepreneurs and investors. What is the trait that you find in common with most of these remarkable people?
Well, for sure, I've divided the book into three parts. Yeah. And these remarkable people have all three parts, which is a growth mindset, that they're willing to try new things. They have an attitude of grit, that they're willing to work very hard for a long time. And finally, towards the end of their lives and careers, they embrace a grace and graciousness. So they believe that they have the obligation to pay back society and to help other people succeed. And I think those three qualities define a remarkable person.
Got it. And I think you know all these qualities are really important. And you know, since you've built multiple skill sets, how do you go about planting those seeds so that you know you're able to capitalize on that? And also, you know, should you focus on one skill at a time, or can you also build multiple skills at the same time?
I think that, well, everybody's different, but step one is understanding the growth mindset, understanding the fixed mindset and the disadvantages of that. And then this book is extremely tactical, right? So it's like every section has bullet items on what to do, you know, take foreign languages, meet diverse people, you know, all those kind of tactical things. So this book and my writing style in general, it's not at a quote unquote high level. You know, it's like sometimes you read a book and it says, oh, you need to be innovative to be successful. And then you think about that for 5 minutes, you say, shit, I knew that. Or like, what? I just read a book to tell me I need to be innovative to be successful. So the hard part is not figuring out you need to be innovative. The hard part is how do you innovate?
Yeah.
That's the question.
True.
And I answer that question in this book. So,
Got it. And you also talk about, you know, to do epic shit in life, you know. So, you know, a lot of people talk about big things, but how do you actually do epic shit? It's about really doing the grunt work and then, you know,
well, listen, the honest answer is I think that in many cases, you start doing a very simple thing, like I'm going to make a few motherboards for this computer club, right? That's Waz's attitude. He makes a few motherboards, he sells a few. And now, 20 something years, 30 years later, it's Apple, the most valuable company. Now, I guarantee you that when Steve Wozniak started Apple, he wasn't saying to himself, how do I create a trillion-dollar market cap company? He was thinking, how do I sell 20 of these motherboards to other geeks like me? So I think that's how it works, that you know, you start small and you're like a little acorn, and then 20 years later, you're an entire oak tree. And it's in the acorn from the start, but you know, you got to plant a lot of acorns to get an oak. It's not 100%. So it's, I mean, just that's just what it is. And I think entrepreneurs should, they should take the pressure off themselves that they think they have to build the next Apple, they have to build the next Tesla. You know, if it were that simple, everybody would build the next Apple or Tesla. Now, you know, venture capitalists may have these delusions that they can pick the next Apple or Tesla, but let me tell you something, venture capitalists are wrong 99% of the time. So, if it were a science, more people would do it, trust me.
Got it. And you know, in the book you also talk about, you know, it's rather than creating a category, it's better to create a subcategory. You know, somebody who's listening to this, you know, how should they look at you know, building a subcategory within, like, say, an
Yeah.
Airbnb or an
Okay.
Uber
So
model?
this is the work of David Auchert that I describe in the book. And what he's saying is that it's so hard and so rare to create a category because you would have to explain to people why this thing that they never heard of now should exist, right? So let's take cars. So with cars, I guarantee you it was hard enough, but it was much easier to create a subcategory called minivans or a subcategory called SUVs or a big subcategory called electric cars than to create a new category beyond cars that's different from cars, right? So if you're going to create a new, it's if you It's easier to create a new computer because everybody knows what a computer is. But if people didn't know what your new category is, you have to explain to them the category and your device. And that's just too hard. So, you know, this book is not the first in a new category. It is in a category that already exists. And I want that subcategory of people who want to be remarkable and make a difference.
Got it. Super interesting. And you also talk about, you know, how do you get mentors? So, you know, what I found challenging is, like, you can't really go up and tell somebody that you want to become, can you become my mentor? You know, I think it's better to ask them for feedback and build that sort of relationship. But for young listeners, you know, if they want to look up to a mentor, you know, what is your advice to them to, you know, how do you find good mentors?
Well, I think that, listen, mentors are great people because they can help you avoid a lot of mistakes. But finding a mentor and actually getting the mentor is a very difficult process. Yeah. And actually, it's good that it's a difficult process, because if it were easy, mentors would be overloaded. So it's good that, you know, you really have to stand out. So it takes a lot of background research. I mean, you know, if somebody said, yeah, Guy, will you mentor me? And I said, so, yeah, sure. So, you know, what field are you in? And they said, oh, I'm an eye surgeon. I would say, like, well, how can I be your mentor? I don't know anything about eye surgery. So yeah. It has to be somebody relevant. And I would also advise you that many times you should ask the people who seem the busiest, which is contrary to logic. You would think you would ask the person who's not busy to be your mentor. But the danger there is that there may be a reason why that person is not busy, which is that person is either not good or an asshole. So, you know, ask people who are busy, and you still might get turned down. Don't get me wrong, but I think it's the shot. And then when you ask people to be your mentor, and if, God help you if they say yes, do not waste their time. Do not ask dumb shit questions that you should have been able to answer yourself. That is a waste of time. So, and if it's been answered someplace else, you know, don't ask your mentor. If I mentor you, don't ask me what it was like to work for Steve Jobs. Just freaking use Google. Figure that out yourself, okay?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Totally get that. And, you know, Guy, you've been a great storyteller. Is there any framework that you use to do storytelling, or, you know?
The only framework I use is it's the truth. I don't make shit up. And, you know, part to get good stories, you got to be in the game, right? You gotta be shucking and jiving. You got to be moving and grooving. If you're just sitting alone staring at your Unix monitor, you ain't going to get a lot of good stories. So you have to be out there. You have to put yourself out there. That's just the way it is.
Right. And you know, I went to B school, and, you know, obviously we talked about, you know, Guy Kawasaki's 10, 20, 30. you know, use 10 slides in 20 minutes with 30, you know, size font. Is that still relevant when we are pitching out to VCs and for, you know, for any sort of pitches? Obviously, we use the same framework.
Listen, I haven't pitched to a VC in a long time, and I have no intention of ever pitching to a VC again. But, I mean, I don't know what's different. I mean, you need to be short, and you need to be sweet, and you need to be, I'm thinking, like, what could have changed? Well, maybe people are going to start sticking your PowerPoint files into ChatGPT. So maybe you need to optimize for ChatGPT. I can understand that, but I mean, I see no intellectual case why now you should use 80 slides and use 6-point font and, you know, take 3 hours to present it. Nothing has changed about those things.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, since COVID, you know, what has happened is people have started either working in hybrid settings or into remote settings. And the biggest challenge is, like, how do you manage up or manage down? especially, you know, there's a lot of discussions about how do you manage a team, your who reporting to you. But what is your advice, or how do you manage your boss up? Any pointers on that?
Well, first of all, I think that using Zoom is a skill, just like any other skill. And so, in this world that it's going to be hybrid, maybe forever, you just need to learn how to use Zoom well. And it's simple things like, don't look at the video image thinking you're looking into somebody's eyes. You have to look at the camera, not at the video, right? Unless you have a teleprompter. I have a teleprompter. So right now, I think I'm looking in your eyes, but I'm really looking in the camera, right?
Oh, nice.
So, I mean, that's one trick, but not everybody does that, right? Simple things like that. And if you're a manager, you need to invest in some technology. Your image should be crystal clear. You should be probably using a digital camera, not the built-in camera in your laptop. I mean, there's these things that are pretty simple, but a lot of people don't do them. And then I also believe that management is always difficult. So it's not like before the pandemic and before remote work, management was easy and everybody had it perfected. And then, the pandemic screwed everything up and we're all learning again. I mean, it was screwed up back then too, so it's no different. But now you just have to, I could make the case that you might be able to be a better manager with Zoom, because if you have a worldwide team, how often are you flying to London to meet with your European team? And then you got to go to Beijing and Shanghai. I mean, I would make the case that Zoom is better than seeing your team once a year.
No, absolutely. I think that has helped in the last couple of years for people to do more meetings over Zoom, but there's also Zoom fatigue, which happens because you're not meeting your colleagues or people that often. And just to follow up on that, what's been, you've had a lot of people in your career, but what's been your biggest lesson when it comes to hiring, or any mistakes that you made when you looked at hiring people in your team?
I think the mistake that most people make is they hire people who are similar to them, right? So if you're white, male, Ivy League educated, guess who you hire, right? But what you should hire is male, black,
Or female.
state school educated. I mean, you need diversity. There's a reason why diversification helps. It brings you more viewpoints. It brings you more kind of outlooks and perspectives that if everybody was a Yale male graduate, man, you're headed for, well, I guess if you're a private equity company or a hedge fund, yeah, make them all white males from Ivy League, because quite frankly, you're not contributing to society anyway, so I don't give a shit. But if you want a company that reflects true consumerism, you need a diverse team.
Got it. Nice. And I read somewhere that you quit Apple twice. You turned Steve Jobs for a third job. You also turned down Sequoia Capital to be chanced for to become a CEO of Yahoo. So as you get older in life, you have those sort of regrets. But how do you keep away from those regrets and have a positive attitude and keep moving forward and keep learning from those mistakes that you made in career?
Could you repeat that question? That didn't come through.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. So what I meant, I read somewhere that you quit Apple, you turned down, Steve Jobs for a job, and you also turned down a job to be the CEO of Yahoo. So, as you grow older in life, how do you manage
Well, I
regrets?
mean, luckily, those mistakes, I have compensated for them. Now, it literally may be luck, okay? But I'll tell you that, as Steve Jobs said in his commencement address, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. Because if you could connect the dots looking forward, everybody would have an optimal life. It's just not possible. And, you know, take a real extreme example. Let's say you work for Theranos and now your COO and CEO are in jail and Theranos is gone and it was a huge fraud and all that. And you're thinking, oh my God, I'm tarnished by working for Theranos. But, you know, you probably learned a very valuable lesson that someone who worked for a company that went straight to the moon will never know, which is about honesty and responsibility to shareholders. And, you know, what should you do when you see that the product is not working, but your marketing people are lying and saying it is? And, you know, I think that if you worked at Theranos, you would have a lot of lessons that you may not have gotten if you just went straight to work for Facebook or Google.
Absolutely. And you know, we talked about technology and ChatGPT. How do you see, you know, the use of technology and AI impact the principles? Well,
I can tell you that nobody believes in AI more than me. It has made me a much better writer. I use it almost every day. And my take on this is that my moral obligation is to create the best podcast and best book that I can.
Yeah.
And if that means using an LLM, so be it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think people are saying, oh, I want to listen to a podcast that doesn't use AI at all. I mean, you know, does that make any sense to you? I mean, you want to get the best pictures, the best text, the best podcast, the best everything. And I mean, it's you know, is it any different when you say, oh, that CEO is a great speaker? Well, that great CEO has a team of speechwriters.
True.
So what's the difference between using a speechwriter and ChatGPT to write your presentation? I don't see any difference.
Yeah. And what's been your process for writing the book? You know, obviously you would have used AI, but did it take you, you know, a couple of years to think through process?
What we did is we printed out every transcript. So this is 4,000 pages. And we went through the transcript and we're looking for key messages. And we would just highlight the key message with a post-it pad. And then we would look through all the messages and take notes on the messages and lessons. And we spent about 6 or 7 months putting that into an outline.
Oh.
And then we started writing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, I read a very interesting thing on your book, which is that, you know, you lost a bit of your hearing, and when you're doing those podcasts, you would read transcripts. So my apologies for my Indian accent if I'm not, you know, that's what my accent is. But is it difficult to it's always, I mean, difficult to do a podcast where, you know, it's difficult for you to hear. But thank you for being vulnerable. But, you know, it was amazing.
I mean, you know, if you didn't know I was deaf based on this conversation we've been having, it would not occur to you that I'm deaf, right?
Yeah, no.
Now, partially, this is because of the miracle of a cochlear implant. So a cochlear implant takes you from being deaf to having lousy hearing. It doesn't take you to perfect hearing, but to go from not hearing anything to hearing lousy is a big step. I mean, it's kind of a miracle. Now, there was a brief time where I was more or less deaf and I was trying to do a podcast and I would really have to rely on Chrome's live transcriptions. Nice. So even right now, Chrome is transcribing what you're saying. So it helps me understand what you're saying. Don't get me wrong, but you know, I mean, it's just, you got to use the tools at your disposal. And if you're deaf, you use a cochlear implant. If you cannot type, you use transcription. I mean, that's what people who want to make a difference do. They don't look for excuses to fail. They look for ways to overcome problems.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what inspires me. And that's why you're the great, you're the great Guy Kawasaki, because you turn obstacles into, opportunities. But what's next for you after Think Remarkable? Do you have more books?
Oh, I don't, I've said this is my last book 15 times now, so I can say 16 times this is my last book. I don't know. I write I calculated that I've written 16 books since 1987 till 2024. So that's 37 years. So in 37 years, I wrote 16 books. So every 2.5 years or so, I write a book. And I write a book when I have something to say. So I guess it takes me 2.5 years to figure out something new to say. So I'll check with you in 2.5 years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Really looking forward to your next book again. Guy, I quickly want to do the topsy. What's your favorite business book?
My favorite business book. My favorite business book may actually be it may be Stanley McChrystal's book called Risk, in which he explains how leaders deal with risk. So Stanley McChrystal's book is one. My favorite book in general is a book called If You Want to Write by Brenda Yulin, because it helped me break through my doubts of being a writer. And then Mindset by Carol Dweck helped me, open my mind to taking risks. So between those three books, I would, oh, and then one more, Influence by Bob Cialdini. So if I were a
Influence.
business person, if I were CEO, I would read Stanley McChrystal's book. I would read Bob Cialdini's book about influence and persuasion. I mean, those two for sure. And if I was an independent creative person, I would want to read If You Want to Write by Brenda Yulin.
Yeah, no, I think all of them great books. We'll put that in the show notes. And if you could go back in time when you started writing Think Remarkable, what is the one thing you would have focused on or done anything differently?
If I were to go back in time, you mean a couple years and write
Yeah.
Think Remarkable again?
Yeah. If you want to write the book again, is it something you would have done differently?
There's one place so far I would have done something different, which is I talk about the growth mindset by Carol Dweck. I also think that I learned this from Carol Dweck's protege after the book was done. Her name is Mary Murphy. And what I learned is a mindset is more or less in your head. But it's also important to realize that you need to be in a growth mindset environment. So if the company you work for doesn't believe in growth and change and diversity, you're going to be very unhappy. So it's not just what's in your head. You need to look for places that embrace the growth mindset.
Got it. No, absolutely. It totally makes sense. And what's your favorite online tool, for example, Gmail, Slack, Zoom?
I am such a slave to email that it's probably the mail app from Apple. But I've used four or five different email apps, and none of them make me happy. They just, I don't know, they're just, and okay, so that's one thing. So I don't believe there's a great email app out there. And the second thing that just amazes me is that contact management and calendaring sucks in 2024. I don't understand why there are not better calendars and better contact management in 2024. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean the couple of tools like Calendly and Cal.com
Yeah.
and a few others, but yeah.
Well, I
I
mean, I'll give you a perfect example. So with Gmail, let's say you like Gmail because you can use all the add-ons and extensions if you're in the Chrome browser. So you use Gmail as opposed to an email client. But I swear to God, I don't understand. Why can't I sort on the from field in Gmail? Because you know what? That is so important, right? So for like scheduling a podcast, let's say that you are the person and to schedule a podcast, I bet it takes five or six different emails going back and forth. Like,
Yeah, true.
you know, we would love to have a guy. We would love to be on. These are the dates I'm free. These are the dates we accept. You know, now I'm sending you the Zoom link. You know, so there's like five or 10 emails, right? And you know, when you get them in your inbox, you don't want to delete them because everything is not set yet. You need to keep those in your inbox. But then once it's set, and certainly once the recording has happened, now there's 10 emails from the same person for this podcast recording, right? So now there's 10 of these, and like at any given moment, I have 10 basic podcast schedules going on where either I'm the guest, and then there's probably another 10 where I'm trying to get a guest. There's probably, so it's 10 times 20. So there's probably 200 emails in my inbox. And the day that the podcast is over, all of them can be archived, right?
Yeah.
And the best way to archive that is look from the from the podcaster, because all those things, are you interested? Yes, I'm interested. These are the dates I'm available. Yes, I'll take that one. Here's the Zoom link. Thank you very much. Is it going to be audio or video, or is it going to be both? And like all those emails, if you could sort them by the from, you could archive like 10 or 20 at a time, right?
Sure.
So, how is it in 2024? Nobody in Google who uses Gmail has figured out, you know, something sorting by the from is very useful. Also, let's say that you really got me started. You might regret this. So let's say that you send multiple people the same subject line, right? Like, I don't know, would you like to be on my podcast, or would you like a review copy of my book? So you know how useful it would be if you could sort by subject line so that all the people responding to your email asking if you'd like a copy of my book, they're all in one place as opposed to sorted by the date received, which is the only way. So now you can look, oh, these are all the people that want my book, and it's because the subject line is the sort field. How can it be in 2024 that nobody inside of Google has figured out maybe we should offer people the ability to sort on any field that they want, right? And maybe you want to sort on the company field because you want to answer all the people from Google at one time. I mean, there's so many use cases for this. How the hell is it that that isn't true? I don't understand. I don't even know how we got on this subject, but you may regret now putting me on this subject, but that's
No,
just in case someone from Google is listening.
yeah, no, absolutely. We should clip this and send it to the Gmail product team.
Righty.
Yeah, guy, and what are the best way people can reach out to you and know more about Think Remarkable?
Well, there's several answers to that question. So first of all, I'm Guy Kawasaki at Gmail. That's the easiest, right? I don't hide my email address. I'm Guy Kawasaki at Gmail. Send me an email, see if I answer.
I
And
got an
then,
answer,
you know, my book is everywhere online. And I mean, if you cannot find my book to buy, you probably don't know how to use the internet. It ain't gonna be that hard. All righty.
Got
So
it.
if you're out there listening and you want to make a difference and you want to be remarkable and you need some help in these processes, I'm telling you, I wrote the best book ever to help you do this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's one great book. It's a very easy read, and I totally loved it. I've listened to some of your podcasts. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
onto the
you.
pod,
Thank
and
you. All the best to
you've
you.
been special. Thank you.
Oh, and I'm going to send you a link. Let me see here. We have chat in here, right? Let's see.
Thanks for listening to the Life Self Mastery podcast, where we teach you how to start and grow your online business. For more information, visit Rohit's blog at www.lifeselfmastery.com.